Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right, we are. And my voice is probably sounding a little different to you. That's because I, the Kansas City Chiefs superfan, am back. Andrew, our Jets superfan, unfortunately died of a mysterious accident shortly after his AFC breakdown. No foul play, none, but message sent. Not really. He's actually going to be back in a few weeks. But if you haven't heard what he thinks about my team, and you for some reason want a whiny little man to ramble endlessly about why he doesn't like watching the Chiefs, if that is your thing, there's a lot of that in a couple of shows back. But most important is getting to this week on Next Fan Up, and I am joined by two other superfans here. I am joined by our Seahawks superfan, Justin. How's it going, Justin?
It is going great. Just to be clear, I did come to the defense of the Chiefs a little bit. Please do not hurt me.
No worries, no worries. I have a feeling, though, our other superfan here is not going to be coming to their defense quite as much. It is a guy we haven't heard from in a little bit. It is Ken, our Chargers superfan, and my rival. How's it going, Ken?
Oh, it is. It's a beautiful day in San Diego, like always. So things are going great. And to be fair, I also do not enjoy watching the Chiefs play. So
maybe that's because we've.
I don't necessarily agree with everything that Andrew said, but they're a boring team. It's just plain and simple.
A boring team that beat you guys by a collective score of like 40-10 last season over the two games that we swept.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But yeah, we're not here to talk about the Chiefs, although that's largely what I'm here for. But we have a lot of other things to get to. We are going to be talking about, obviously, the Jalen Ramsey news and how the Jacksonville Jaguars just can't catch a break. We're going to be talking about the Washington Post poll and article about whether or not the Native American community finds the name of the Washington football franchise offensive. We're also going to be getting into, we have the first 30 of the top 100, NFL.com's top 100, which is always interesting and perplexing. And if we have time, we're going to jump into to at least one of the lists that have been put out by Matt Williamson, friend of the podcast. And he has some, let's just say some interesting rankings of various players. But to jump right into it first, you know, we had the news this week that Jalen Ramsey, the first-round pick by the Jacksonville Jaguars, fifth overall, he is now going to be seeing James Andrews to get a second opinion about a torn meniscus in his right knee. According to ESPN.com, depending upon the type of surgical procedure required, Ramsey can miss anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months. The Jaguars, obviously, last season, around this time, just after the draft, they had their first overall pick, Dante Fowler. He tore his ACL in the OTAs. And so this is 2 years in a row. They've had a top five pick in the draft, a defensive, wunderkind that they're going to be able to add to the team whose start to the NFL is going to be at least delayed. But also, I mean, these are the sort of knee injuries that, players don't always come back 100% from this. And so they're now suddenly getting damaged goods just to start out. It's pretty rough. But so, Justin, what's your reaction to the news?
I feel terrible for Jalen Ramsey. Obviously, it's your dream to play in the NFL. You finally get drafted. You've got your shot. And at least the start of your first season is in jeopardy. Feel really bad for Jacksonville. I cannot believe this has happened to them 2 years in a row with really top shelf talent. I feel bad for Gus Bradley, who hopefully is not on too hot of a seat right now, because I think he's a really, really good coach. But I mean, this worries me. Jalen Ramsey is a bigger guy at corner, but he's kind of big, fast, strong, all those things. So I worry a little bit about the pounding that takes place on that knee. He's not like a lineman who kind of stays in a relatively small space. You've got to get out there and stride. It also worries me that when he was in high school, he had microfracture surgery on that same knee. And I'll be honest, I haven't heard of people that young getting microfracture fracture surgery. I don't know if there's any relation. That was a lot of years ago, so maybe that's totally fine. But as a guy who's not a doctor, that really worries me.
And what about you, Ken? I mean, I was really expecting you guys to draft Ramsey. I mean, he seemed like a perfect replacement for your all-league, practically, safety that left. And I don't know, I'm still sort of confused by the Joey Bosa scheme fit. But anyways, I mean, it looks like, in a sense, you guys, it's good that you didn't get him in if this was going to be what was going to happen.
So before I talk a little bit about Joey Bosa, I would just like to say the three words that you do not want to hear during the NFL offseason is Dr. James Andrews. You never want to hear that. So I feel really, really terrible for them. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about the Joey Bosa thing, but right now I feel a lot better about it than I did, let's say, when I wanted Jalen Ramsey. It's just really, really unfortunate that this has happened 2 years in a row. And, you know, corner or safety is really, really reliant on your speed and your physical prowess. It's not something that you necessarily want to lose any sort of, you know, physical attributes. I mean, you know, you'll have guys like Rod Woodson who go into their 30s, but typically when corners and safeties lose a step, it doesn't work out so well for them. So it's a real bummer that this happened to him. I wish him all the best. And just to touch on the Bosa thing, if you were to watch college football in the last 3 years, and you might have been watching Ohio State, they were featured a lot. Who was the best player in college football? Well, it was Joey Bosa, and we just drafted that player. And so, regardless of scheme fit, regardless of anything, we may have gotten the best player in the draft, and I am 100% on board.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, you can draft the best player in the draft and then put him at kicker, and he's not going to kick very well for you. I mean, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure if you guys have smart coaches, you'll figure out a good way to use them. But I'm surprised they're not putting him at outside linebacker and they want to put him on the line on a 3-4 at like 265 pounds or whatever he is. I mean, that just seems – in the same way, actually, a DN that the Chiefs drafted, Dowdy Nicholas, he's like 235, 240, something like that. And they were putting him on the line, again, you know, as a down lineman trying to shoot gaps against Ohio State's quarterback, you know, right tackles and guards and things like that. And there's just, he was put in a position where he had no chance. I mean, regardless of his physical prowess and his skill at pass rushing and stuff. But we will see, unless we get too derailed. The other thing I wanted to get to that was sort of in the news, and we've seen a lot of discussion about it this week, was this big article that was put out by the Washington Post. They did a poll about the nickname of their team, the Redskins. So they did a poll of 504 people across every state in the district, it says, who self-identify as Native Americans, asking them if they are offended or if they find, so this is the question, as a Native American, do you find the name Redskins offensive or does it not bother you? And what they found is 9% of the people they talked to said they found the name offensive. 90% said that it didn't bother them, and 1% said no opinion. And so their article is written in this, you know, in this way. I mean, they seem very proud of this poll, and they wrote it in a way that's like, well, this clearly vindicates, you know, or at least takes pressure off the team over, you know, in this dispute over changing the name. And obviously, the activist groups that have been in favor of changing the name for a long time, they've thrown out, you know, quite a bit of skepticism on the methodology and what can really be gleaned from this anyway. I mean, I have my own thoughts on it, but I want to throw it to you first, Justin, because I know you, this is something you have some strong feelings about.
I do. This is an issue that I feel really, really strongly about. Some of it might be my own background. I am Native American. I grew up very close to a Native American reservation in Montana. I always have identified myself that way. So it's something that is central to my identity just as a person. And all of my life, that term has been a racist term. You know, it's like, you know, when you're with your buddies and you say things to them that you could never say in front of other people, but because they're your buddies, you get away with it. Maybe sometimes you beat each other up about it. That was one of those words. I mean, it's not the sort of word that you get to use in just normal conversation. And the fact that can be the name of a sports franchise is a serious issue. In regards to that poll, I have kind of two angles on that. One is there definitely seems to be a lot of flaws in the poll, in the methodology. It's a sample size of about 500 people, and everybody was self-identifying it, and it seems that over half of them actually don't have any sort of tribal affiliation, which means that over half of them really, I think my uncle was 164th Chickasaw, so I guess I'm Native American, you know, that kind of check the box that a lot of people do without having any kind of knowledge exposure to it. But even if the poll is totally, totally accurate, there were something like 5 million Native Americans at the last census. So that means that 10% of that is still hundreds of thousands of people. And if you're offending hundreds of thousands of people, at a minimum, you need to stop and take it seriously and think about if it's reasonable. The people who defend the name fall back on the same tropes that we've used to defend racist things for years and years, going back to Jim Crow, going back to white and black only fountains and entrances to restaurants, you know, arguments that, oh, it's always been that way, why is it an issue now, that, oh, it's not intended to be racist, oh, it's actually for their benefit, they prefer it that way, or, you know, the Native Americans feel honored by this name. It's the same arguments that are brought up over and over again that you see repeat throughout history, and we're seeing those things right now. The truth of the matter is there is a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of discussion about it. The reason why there's not more, though, is in the Native American community at large, there are much, much bigger fish to fry. It's a community that's rife with drug abuse, alcohol abuse, poverty. And so a lot of the community doesn't have time to worry so much about the name of this franchise in Washington. But that doesn't mean that it's not important, and it doesn't mean that the onus on the rest of society isn't there to say, hey, this is wrong, this is incorrect, this is something that is actively harming people, which it is. And so, yeah, my feelings on this are incredibly strong. It's one of those things where when my grandparents would tell me about how things were in the 50s and the 60s in regards to race relations, especially between whites and blacks, and to me, I just can't comprehend that. It just seems so weird that people thought it was okay. I feel like I'm going to be having a similar conversation with my kids when they're older about things like this. I think it comes from the same place. And I think as we develop as a people, we're going to look back at it the same way and just kind of add that to the list of sort of yucky things from our history.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, granted, this is, as Pod Vader said, we're not endorsing anybody, but this has not been a great year for race sensitivity in public discourse. But Ken, I want to get to you before I go on my own rant about this. What are your thoughts on the issue of the Redskins and the name?
So my big thing is always I feel really, really bad for Washington fans, because if I was a Washington fan and I grew up loving my team, loving my logo, loving my colors, I would not want that to change. However, just because you love your team and you grew up with tradition doesn't mean that it's not something that we should change, because there is absolutely no way that Dan Snyder would be able to walk up to someone of Native American descent and call them a Redskin. That is unacceptable. And you know what? We need to fix the mistake. There's been a mistake made. It wasn't made by me. It wasn't made by anyone in our generation. But when you named the team, you named it something offensive. And you know what? We got to fix that. There's no place for that in America these days. And the fact that we have a franchise, a worldwide brand that is racist, is unacceptable. So I feel bad for Redskins fans because, you know, there's no way that in 50 years this franchise will be called the same thing. There's just absolutely no way. It'll reach a breaking point at some point. So I feel bad for them that they're losing part of their tradition. However, just because you have a tradition doesn't make it right. And in my eyes, it's unacceptable. So I support the change if there ever will be one. And I think there will. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you guys have hit a lot of the points that I wanted to make. I also just, because in my day life as not a super fan, or at least not as much of a super fan, I am a journalist, and the way that the article was written, it had three writers on it, which means to me this is probably way over edited, and I think the paper wanted to really trumpet the fact that, oh, this, like, we did something that maybe this means something, and they were trying to, like, go on and on about, like, how important their poll was in terms of where it sits in the discussion, and it was just not well written. Anyways, but so also Neil, our Washington super fan, he wrote in and said that in terms of the poll, small sample size, poor question. It should have been two. Bottom line, if a team wanted to call itself the Whiteskins or the Blackskins, it rightly wouldn't be acceptable because the minority group isn't large or vocal enough. That's not an excuse for this, staying on so long. Hopefully society at large will be mature enough to end the issue. A good reminder is the fact that no other team nickname gets 1 minute of discussion. The contrast is stark. I absolutely agree with you guys. I mean, I went to university in Washington, and I lived in the area for quite a while. And so I have, in terms of any team other than the Chiefs, they're the one that I sort of have followed the closest. But I absolutely agree that the name should change, and this is not really an important or meaningful change in the discussion. But to put it a little bit wider, though, I mean, because, look, the Chiefs are also a team that, that all of its down to the emblem, to the fan chants and things like that. There's a lot of cultural appropriation there too, obviously. And it's obviously, there are Chiefs fans that will stupidly try to claim that, oh no, this is all about like this former mayor of Kansas City who like was an honorary member of the tribe and that he was nicknamed the Chiefs. And so like, the Chiefs are really about him, the mayor, not about Native Americans. And it's like, that's stupid. Our emblem is an arrowhead and it's Arrowhead Stadium. Like you can't. But anyways, what I find it interesting is the team, at least the Chiefs, have been very good at engaging with local Native American tribes and getting their input on things. And they've changed quite a bit. Apparently, back in like the 70s, sort of the team mascot was a white dude in a headdress. It would ride around on a horse, whenever they would score and things like that. And they discontinued that. They discontinued a lot of the other stuff, emblems that the local tribes found insensitive or offensive or whatever you want to call it. And what's cool is they've actually gotten them involved a bit as well, and that they the big drum that they pound on during sort of the pregame pep rally sort of section of it was given to the team, and they get new ones each year from one of the local tribes because they're like, oh, like if you're gonna do this stuff, do it right, basically. I think that's great, actually. I mean, and that's probably the right way to do it. There are still things, though, that the Chiefs do that I think a lot of people find distasteful. I mean, like the Chiefs also do the tomahawk chop, like the Redskins fans do. And a lot of people say that that's also offensive. I'm interested to get Justin's take on it. But it's interesting to me because I think people in Kansas City generally feel like the team has approached this well. But then when the team has been on the road a few times, I mean, like I remember when we were up in Minnesota last year, there actually was I'm not sure how big, but there was a fairly sizable protest in Minneapolis against the team by the local Native American community that objected to some of the Chiefs stuff. So I'm not sure how aware they were of how the team has been approaching it. But either way, this is an issue that doesn't only involve Washington. Although I do, I think their name is by far the worst, and it's just, and again, I agree with you guys on all of this, but like, what do you guys think of the other teams, like the Cleveland Indians and the Atlanta Braves and the Chiefs?
So I actually go to San Diego State University, and we are the Aztecs. And so, this type of thing is something that, my school has dealt with. And I felt like I feel like there's a right way to go about these type of things. I think I'm very proud of my school's mascot, of what the Aztec represents in terms of San Diego. We're very close to Mexico, all that stuff. And they do go through different stages of making sure that this is culturally okay and that we're not using it in an offensive way in any way. And so, for one thing is we do have an Aztec warrior who is our mascot. And in order to be an Aztec warrior, you need to have some Aztec blood in you, because it would be completely offensive for me to dress up as an Aztec and walk around with the headdress and the conch. But you know what? The guy who does it is awesome, and we're celebrating what the Aztecs were, as opposed to not staying true to what an Aztec is. And so, I think Florida State also does it the right way. Now, I don't know that for sure, but I believe that it's, you know, schools or teams that choose to have their mascot be something of a different culture. There's a way to celebrate that culture in a way that does not offend anyone, and I think it's pretty clear that the Washington football team is offensive to some people.
Yeah, in my opinion, there's kind of a lot to cover. I think that there's a spectrum. You know, there's stuff that I think is very respectful, and I think there actually can be a lot of benefit to it. You know, keeping what, at least in my opinion, is sort of the least talked about minority in the United States. Yeah, anything that gets them out to the forefront so that we can talk about the issues, I think is beneficial, but the way you handle it matters. With the aspects, I think that's a great way to handle it, in a way that's respectful and actually can sort of get people talking about that community. The Chiefs, the big thing for me is that, you know, they don't have these, like, awful cartoony caricatures. So, you know, the name's not a slur, so far so good. nobody looks like anything from, like, a racist 1930s cartoon, so there's a check. And so I think, you know, I don't know the legacy behind the name as well, but at least if some people do take issue with that, I think that it's at least a more reasonable approach than Washington. You look at some other sports teams like the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah, I mean, it's a local tribe, as I understand. They actually have some affiliation, and so they're bought into it. Like the Cleveland Indians, I don't mind so much, except for the mascot, Chief Wahoo. I definitely think that that's a serious problem.
It's pretty bad.
I don't think that that's okay. I mean, just take any early caricature cartoon of any other ethnicity and make that a mascot and see how that turns out. It's not going to fly. And so it's kind of a case by case thing. It's tough. You know, I believe strongly in being inclusive, and if people have concerns and if people feel offended, I can't tell somebody if they should be offended or not. It's how they feel. But there should be a check where if somebody is offended, where I can say to myself, okay, why are they offended? Does it seem reasonable? And then I can sort of adjust my behavior accordingly. And I think there's more than enough reasons in the case of Washington to think that's out of whack. Real quick, before we move on, I'd like to just go into sort of the history of the Washington franchise a little bit. They were purchased by George Preston Marshall. They were originally the Braves, and he actually changed the name to the Redskins. He was the very, very last owner to allow any African American players on his team, and he did so kicking and screaming. They didn't have their first African American player until 15 years after the league integrated. To give you a sense for the kind of guy he was, when he died, he set up a charitable foundation. However, his one direction was that not a single dollar should go towards any purpose which supports or employs the principle of racial integration in any form. And he passed away in 1969, and we're talking right before the 70s. So, you know, even if you don't necessarily realize the history behind the name, look at the history of that organization. And I kind of echo your sentiment. I feel bad for people who follow this team. I think, you know, having a local team to root for and follow and grow up with is an amazing thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a privileged thing. It just sucks to have to answer questions like that as a fan. I feel for a lot for the fan base.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, we could talk. We could do a whole show on this, actually, because there's so many other examples in sports of names that have definitely some problems in them. And there's definitely the teams have shown good ways of reacting to it and being open to change, and the Washington franchise is not one of them, definitely. So we'll see where this all leads, but it does seem like there's been a louder backlash against this Washington Post article and the poll and what can be drawn from it than there was, you know, anybody feeling I don't know, vindicated by it. But we'll see how that goes. We did have the case a couple of years ago where the trademark protections have been removed from the name. So, I mean, that alone it sort of gives a hint of where the federal government stands on this. I would be surprised if 10, 20 years from now the name hasn't changed. But who knows? Owners can dig their feet in and keep weird situations going for quite some time. But so I wanted to get to, as our next topic is, this is now totally the time. Granted, we have lists all the time in this sport, but this is definitely the section of the calendar where we get more lists than probably any other time. And that's because everyone needs something to talk about. The draft is over. There's not a whole lot going on other than workouts. But one that I always like looking at, just because I find it just, it's always very different from the other lists you see, it is NFL.com's top 100. And the reason why it's interesting is because it's voted on by the players, and so it largely ends up being more of a popularity contest, and it tends to be more skewed towards veterans, and so on some level you might be able to say, like, okay, well, the players really know what they're talking about, and so therefore this is the real rankings. On the other hand, there are inherent biases within the system as well. And it's, you know, Justin, I know you can go deeper into how the methodology is a bit weird. But anyways, it's just always interesting. So just to start out, what has been released so far is the bottom 30, so 71 through 100. And so we're going to go through these starting at 100 and moving on up, and seeing some of the weird rankings here. Because it's mixed by position, it's just these are the best players in order. So starting at 100, we have quarterback Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders. Then you have 99, defensive end Cameron Jordan, 98, wide receiver Jarvis Landry, 97, guard Richie Incognito. Can you imagine him being on this list 2 years ago? Anyways, number 96, wide receiver Sammy Watkins. Number 95, defensive tackle Mike Daniels. Number 94, tight end Gary Barnage, ditto. Number 93, wide receiver Jeremy Maclin. 92, quarterback Andrew Luck. And 91, tight end Travis Kelce. So it's interesting that first of all, we have two quarterbacks here, and I think that's going to be the one that we're going to, you know, our eyes are going to jump to first. You have at number 100, Derek Carr, and number 92, Andrew Luck. Both quarterbacks of losing teams this year, and man, I mean, Andrew Luck is one of the weirdest ones to place. But what did you think of these bottom 10 here, Ken?
The only reason Andrew Luck is on this list is because his name is Andrew Luck. Because if you watched him play last year, he clearly was not a top 100 player in the league, and you know he was hurt and he had a terrible team. But it's kind of ridiculous to assume that he was, of last season, a top 100 player in the league. That's just, I would just call that not true. And then the Derek Carr thing, you know, sure, he's an up-and-comer. He looked great in some moments, but at the same time, you know, if you're a top-tier quarterback, you should be winning a few more games than the Raiders did last season. And you could say the same thing about my quarterback, Phillip Rivers. However, I would just show me the two injury reports for the Raiders and the Chargers, and then we'll talk about that, because Phillip Rivers is doing a lot with nothing. And so, you know, I think those two guys, I mean, quarterbacks are always going to be pushed to the top of the best players, but I think there's probably two spots that could have been filled by position players that were not quarterbacks.
Yeah, just to do a quick run through Andrew Luck's stats, I mean, he only played in 7 games last year. But during that, he had a completion percentage of 55.3%, 1,881 yards, 15 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and a QBR of 47.6, passer rating of 74.9, which was basically everywhere there. That was like his worst of his 4-year career. The TD to INT ratio alone was, you know, 15 to 12 is bad. And it would be one thing if, you know, granted, there were a lot of problems on that team, but the thing is when he was totally out, he was basically being outplayed by Matt Hasselbeck 40-year-old Matt Hasselbeck, who's going to be a commentator this year. I mean, that to me is the biggest indictment of him. If Matt Hasselbeck could do more with that offense than Andrew Luck can, like, ugh. But
So with the Colts last season, because I don't hate myself, I didn't watch many Colts games. But I do remember watching the Jets game on Monday night. I believe it was either in week one or week two. And, you know, there's all this hype about Andrew Luck. People are picking him to win the MVP. And then the Jets come out and absolutely destroy Andrew Luck. And I was like, oh, nope, they're terrible. And then I just never watched them ever again. And that's pretty much how I feel about the Colts at this point is like, okay, you have a superstar quarterback who unfortunately got hurt, doesn't have a lot to work with, and you'll try and figure it out, but I wish you the best of luck.
So for me, when I look at it, you know, having Andrew Luck, in a, if it's the top 100 players of 2016, I think it's nuts to have him on the list based off of last year's performance. He wasn't slightly outplayed by Matthew Hasselbeck. He was crushed when you compare the two of them. And Matthew Hasselbeck was being held together by spit and duct tape. Any hit, I expected him to turn to dust. And I say that as a big Matthew Hasselbeck lover, as a Seahawks fan. His play last year was garbage when he played, and then he missed half the season. So, I don't know. I just don't see what criteria you have for putting him on there. I will say, in this kind of early group we're looking at in these top 100, I'm really, really happy to see that Gary Barnage got some love at number 94, tight end from Cleveland, who played fantastic. May never make the list again, but I'm glad he made it up there. And I was also really, really happy to see them throw some love the way of Alan Hearns, wide receiver from Jacksonville. He's a player where, because he's in Jacksonville, I think people don't have any idea just how good of a wide receiver he is.
No, that's totally true. And I would say actually the same about Travis Kelce and Jeremy Maclin. I mean, I think some people might have him on, have those two on their fantasy teams, but
bet you would.
And, you know, they're not going to put up the kind of crazy stats that a lot of other players at their positions are because of the offense that the Chiefs run. They're a ball control, grind it out on the ground, run first team. And so wide receivers and tight ends just aren't going to be putting up mind-blowing stats every week, even though they're by far the two best receiving weapons outside of Jamaal Charles, who was not on the field most of last year. But anyways, I just had, as a Chiefs homer, I have to point out, yep, two on the list so far. Woo! But anyways, moving into the 90s, or rather the 80s, at number 90, we have running back Matt Forte, who switched teams, interestingly. We have, as you mentioned, wide receiver Alan Hearns at 89. 88 is defensive end Cameron Hayward. 87 is wide receiver Julian Edelman. 86 is running back Jonathan Stewart. 85 is another quarterback, this time Captain Kirk Cousins. At 84, we have linebacker Tom Bahali, another Chief. At 83, we have linebacker Talvin Smith. At 82, we have tight end Delanie Walker. And at 81, we have obviously the best quarterback so far mentioned in Alex Smith. I'm just going to leave that one to Ken.
Yeah, it's a little questionable that Alex Smith is a top 100 player in the NFL. I would say that if you were talking about quarterbacks and you needed a median line, whether you are good or bad, Alex Smith would be the guy. I do not think he's good. I do not think he's bad. He's just there. And, you know, that a lot of teams would take that. However, I much, much prefer to have a good quarterback. And so, sure, he might be a top 100 player, but I'm not – if I was a Chiefs fan, I would not be waving the Alex Smith made the top 100 flag because just show me how many playoff games he's won by himself where you're just like, wow, Alex Smith really crushed us today. I have never said that. I'm just like, oh, yeah, the Chiefs played a really good game, you know. Great defense. The running game was unbelievable. Oh, and Alex Smith could complete a third down pass. That's cool. Okay, yeah. I'm not scared of him. So, you know, he's fine, whatever, but that's what you got. What is it? 81? Cool.
Well, crazily enough,
proud of that, though.
I think actually his best game, not only as a Chief, but maybe in like his entire career, was in the 2013 playoff game where the Chiefs had this like historic meltdown. But he posted in that game the best numbers of any Chiefs quarterback in our history. It was like 4 touchdowns, 470-something yards. It was crazy. It was like this sort of Alex Smith game that no one ever sees. And then just as bizarrely, the defense absolutely collapsed. The defense that had been basically what got us to the playoffs. So, I mean, that's what everyone always turns to is like, well, that shows that he has it in him, but I don't know. We'll see. We could have a whole other conversation.
I think Alex Smith is a criminally underrated quarterback. I think because he's not doesn't do a lot of like big chunk yardage plays, people don't give him nearly the credit that he deserves. And I saw him not just in his recent success with San Francisco with Kansas City, but back in San Francisco as well. I saw him a lot, and while his early career was pretty bad, when Harbaugh came to town and now continuing with Reed, he's been fantastic. He has not been in a system where they ask him to do a ton, and he can't push the ball downfield, but he's consistent, and that's more than you can say about a lot of quarterbacks. You mentioned his lack of playoff success. He's actually been really good in the playoffs. You go back to the 2011 season with San Francisco. You know, he played 2 games, I think, before he got hurt. 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. There was one game, I want to say they were playing New Orleans, where he threw for like 350 yards. I mean, he looked like he was borderline like one of the best players on the field. He actually seems to have a knack for turning it on in the playoffs. I think that if the Chiefs had Jeremy Maclin for all of the playoffs last year, I think a lot of people would have very different opinions about Alex Smith right now.
I totally agree. I mean, granted, again, you know, I am the homer, I am the super fan, but I felt like the AFC was a very muddled mess last year. That a lot there was a lot of parity in terms of the top 4, 5, 6 teams were all very, very close. I mean, I bet you shake them up in a bag and you get a different result, different team in the Super Bowl every single time. And in the end, I mean, the Chiefs went into that game in Foxborough very beat up, missing their top wide receiver, the top pass rusher, also, you know, their top actually 3 running backs. And they lost by 7 points on the road against a healthy Patriots team. There's no shame in that. There's a chance that a healthy Chiefs team would have won that game. Either way, I mean, I think he's, this is why I think actually lists, when you're listing quarterbacks, I just don't think it's the right way to do it. Because if depending on what you're looking for in a quarterback, Alex Smith is either going to be your guy or he's not going to be your guy. If you're looking for a guy who can throw the deep downfield bombs and be a risk taker and do those sort of, you know, crazy Hail Marys and things like that, he's just not your guy. However, look, I mean, even Tom Brady doesn't do that anymore. Tom Brady hasn't had a good deep ball in I don't know, 2 or 3 seasons at least. And so as a guy who processes the offense really well and is always going to hit the high percentage play, whether that is a shorter intermediate pass or scrambling, which he's actually very underrated at, he's he's a good quarterback for you. But he's sort of like, he's a top shelf game manager. Like, he's, that's a bad term, but you know, that is what he is. And if that's those are the traits that you prioritize, that you really want to bring to your offense, then he's one of the best at it. I mean, I think Tom Brady is really sort of the best in that category right now. But, you know, he's not Joe Flacco. But guess what? Joe Flacco has a lot of limitations, you know, outside of his deep ball as well. So, anyways, I do think it's interesting. I also wanted to move over to Kirk Cousins because he's 85 here. I think that's also high for me. I'm not a huge Kirk Cousins believer. I think this is going to be a big make-or-break season for him. I mean, he could become a star this year, but I also feel like, you know, he had a really good streak in Washington with against a fairly weak schedule, and where he made a ton of gambles, and just D-backs were dropping interceptions right and left, and he was put in a position to look really good, which was an aberration from, you know, basically how he'd been playing in every other game practically throughout his career. I mean, I think it's possible that he's sort of fixed something in his game and he's going to be a franchise quarterback for them, but I think it's just as likely, if not more likely, that he is, you know, not starting for anybody by the end of the season. I mean, it's he's just going to be an interesting player to watch.
I think there's a lot of players who, if you take the best stretch of their career, just isolate that, they look like they're a top 100 player, and I think Kirk Cousins is one of those guys. But I just don't know with him. So last year he was really, really good. But before that, he was literally the most turnover-prone quarterback of all time. That's really troubling. That's really disturbing. And I don't know if it's because we just happened to catch, you know, his best 16 games all in a row, if there were changes that he made fundamentally or mentally. That said, his early career wasn't all bad either. He had some stretches where even with a healthy, well, not a healthy, but even with, you know, RG3 there being the presumed starter, there were calls for him based off of some really good play that he had. So it's not like he's never done good before. For me, he's just such a big question mark. I think we'll know who he is after this year. And I think he's going to be one of those two people. He's either going to be go back to being the most turnover-prone quarterback of all time, or he is a legitimate starting quarterback in this league.
Yeah, so I actually love Kirk Cousins. Like, the "you like that" line is my favorite thing. It's so good. I love seeing that from players. You know, that's one of the reasons I really love Phillip Rivers, is just loves the game. But next season will tell me a lot more about Kirk Cousins than last season. Because I look at last season of Kirk Cousins, and it could either be, okay, you're a good quarterback now, or you remind me of the Chad Penningtons of the league, or the Rex Grossmans, or the Alex Smith of his early years, you know, where, you know, you're competent, you did some cool things, but you're not there yet. You're not in the discussion of the Roethlisbergers, the Rivers, even the stupid Eli Manning, where you become, where I label you as a good quarterback. Right now, you are a competent quarterback. You know, if you're going into next season, you're not thinking, okay, we have a problem at quarterback, which a lot of teams go through. Redskins don't necessarily think that right now, but I got to see it for more than one season, because he's a fun player to root for. You know, I liked rooting for Washington because of Kirk Cousins, but give me a little more. You know, the playoff performance wasn't exactly stellar, so I need to see more from him, but I do like him a lot. I want him to elevate himself from the Chad Pennington, from the Rex Grossmans, from the, you know, all those mediocre quarterbacks who are on good teams that are, you know, just ho-hum, you know, ho-hum. That's what I would label Kirk Cousins as of right now.
Yeah, I'm interested to know if anybody else in this section in the 80s stands out to you. To me, I find Julian Edelman to be sort of interesting. He's here at 87, and he's obviously extremely valuable to the Patriots, but he's one of those other Patriots receivers where I feel like he would be a total non-factor on any other team. I mean, the fact that he's a smart, crisp route runner, sure hands, and he has a good rapport with Tom Brady, I mean, that is I've just said everything good that you can possibly say about Julian Edelman. and for them, that works to make him a very deadly weapon. But I'm not sure any other team could utilize him well enough. And because of that, I'm not even sure how good he really is as like a standalone player. But I'm interested to get your guys' thoughts, so starting with you, Ken.
Yeah, so Julian Edelman is first of all, he's a baller. I mean, I hate playing against Julian Edelman, just because third and three, I know who's getting the ball. It's Julian Edelman, first down, Patriots. But I think you're right. I think he probably is a system player. Let's say you take a guy like Homer, Keenan Allen, stick him in the Patriots. I think Keenan Allen would be significantly better than Julian Edelman. And, you know, but I appreciate Julian Edelman for all that he is, because he is, you know, the second Wes Welker, and it's great that they've been able to produce these, you know, route running, run after the catch, get first down type players, because those are fun to watch, and we need those in the league.
I think Julian Edelman is a really, really good player. You know, I think people forget that when Julian Edelman went down for a little bit with injury, the Patriots offense struggled a lot. He's incredibly valuable there. I think the Wes Welker comparison is great, and it's not just, you know, his complexion, it's the way he plays the game, where he's fast, he's crisp, he's got a knack for getting in the right place at the right time. When anytime he comes out, Danny Amendola fills his role. Danny Amendola was much, much more heralded coming out of school, considered much more talented, and despite that, he can't fill that role. Whereas Julian Edelman really had to kind of work. I'm not even sure if he was drafted. I know that early in his career, he was playing some cornerback just to get on the field. The dude is a flat-out baller. He is a football player, and his productivity, it would be wrong to give credit to everybody else on the team but him for his productivity.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. So you think that if you were to toss him on another team, another, I mean, not a bad team, not talking about the Browns here or something, but like another playoff team, that he would be as important to that team and could produce as much?
It depends. I mean, I don't think you could put him on an offense with like a Mike Martz offense where it's all seven-step drops and go deep. I don't think that's what he fits. But anything that uses a lot of like West Coast principles, timing routes, I think he can be really good for that. Or anything that is using a lot of formations to generate open players, I think he fits those really, really well. And it's not just fit. I think he can execute at a much higher level than most of the other players in the league at his position. I think him in the, cracking the top 100 is reasonable and warranted and deserved.
All right, cool. Well, let's move on to the 70s then. So at the end of the, at least this 10, you know, you have at 80, Chiefs linebacker Derek Johnson, followed by Ryan Khalil, center, at 79. Then at 78, running back Chris Ivory. At 77, tight end Jordan Reed. At 76, defensive tackle Linval Joseph. At 75, running back Jamal Charles. At 74, wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders. At 73, safety Harrison Smith. At 72, wide receiver Doug Baldwin. At 71, defensive end Calais Campbell. The only person I want to point out here, not only because he's a Chief, just because it's just interesting to me that the biggest faller so far in the top 100 that has been released from year to year is that Jamal Charles was ranked 12th in the top 100 last year, and now is 75 after spending most of the season on the bench or on the trainer's table with the torn ACL, and I think it was week 5. And yeah, there's a bit of uncertainty as to how good he's going to be coming back from that. But anyways, he fell from 12 to 75. That's a big drop. Although I'm sure there's a lot of people that totally fell out of this thing. Anyways, one of the guys on there that I think surprised both of you as we were talking off the air was Chris Ivory. Ken, what are your thoughts on Chris Ivory here? He was not on the list last year.
Yeah, I don't know about Chris Ivory. I mean, do all 32 starting running backs from the NFL make the list? Well, I hope not, because Melvin Gordon certainly shouldn't be on there. But, you know, you see Chris Ivory in your opponent's fantasy league, and you're like, okay, he might get 60 yards and a touchdown. But, you know, for a running back to make the top 100, I want playmaking. I want someone that the defensive coordinator goes in the room, we are stopping this guy. Kind of felt like the Jets on offense this year were just like, okay, yeah, we have a mediocre running back, we have a terrible quarterback, or not terrible, mediocre quarterback, and we have an awesome receiver, and let's just go and try and do average things on offense, and let's not lose the game. And for me, that's not a top 100 running back, but, you know, I guess he's top 100, but, it's, you know, kind of like Alex Smith. He's the Alex Smith of running backs. Chris Ivory. Yeah, whatever. They brought in Matt Forte this year for a reason. Wasn't that great?
Yeah, it baffles me that he's on this list at all. Chris Ivory's not a very good football player. He is the most blah running back in the league. To me, he's one of those players where if you watch him play after play after play, he's incredibly unimpressive. And then every now and then, he goes on these runs where he looks like kind of a mini Marshawn where a bunch of guys bounce off of him. And he scoops for like 20, 25 yards. And people just see that in the highlight, and they think he's a much better player than he is. But, I mean, he's kind of a one-trick pony, and his trick is blah, blah, all right, whatever. And to me, that is not a top player. There's nothing top player-ish about that. In regards to Jamal Charles, this one's tough for me because, to me, he is either a top 12 player or he should be off the list. Are we saying that Jamal Charles, with only one ACL, is the 75th best player in the league? To me, that's it's crazy. If you wanted to rank him what you think he really is, and what you think he will be next year, I think he should be probably a top 20 player. If you want to say he exploded his knee again, then he needs to be off the list completely. But over here in kind of no man's land, he's just stupid.
Well, I would agree with you on that. One player of yours I wanted to talk about, actually, is that I feel like Doug Baldwin is a guy who doesn't really... He sort of flies under the radar. I don't think he gets as much praise in the league that he should. I mean, he's... Granted, he's not even... You guys are top target most of the time. But You know, it's interesting that, you know, at least with the players voting, he gets, you know, he gets some kudos here at number 72. What do you think about him?
I think it's long overdue. And so I've got mixed feelings about this one. So he definitely belongs on this top 100 list. Absolutely. And the higher the better. I guarantee you he is on here for the wrong reason, and that's what drives me kind of nuts. He went on this incredible tear at the end of the season, the likes of which that has literally only happened once when Jerry Rice did it. Like, that's how incredible this tear was. And not only was he dominant on the field, and this coincided with the team switching to a very pass-first approach after losing both of our running backs, and so predictably, as our number one receiver, he got most of the targets and was incredible. But he just scored a lot of touchdowns. And a lot of that, especially when you're not the biggest target around, it's kind of happenstance. It just kind of it works out that way in terms of down and distance. Not to say that he obviously didn't have a hand in it, but I think that is why a lot of people voted for him. Is he had this, I think he might have led the league in touchdowns for wide receiver and had this incredible run at the end. I think that's what got him in the list. And that's not why he should be in the list. He is a tremendous football player regardless of that. He's a phenomenal route runner, an incredible competitor. He makes some of the absolute best catches that you're ever going to see. But they don't usually make the top countdown because he's not, you know, a famous wide receiver as much as other players. He's a special teams mainstay. He's one of the heart and souls of the entire identity of the team. And he's one of those guys where he could easily follow that Golden Tate model where, you know, he leaves and everybody thinks he's pretty good. And then he starts just lighting up, and everybody's like, where has this been the whole time? And here in Seattle, we've known it's been there since the beginning. It's just not the way that we play, so you don't get those crazy inflated stats. So, yeah, he deserves some recognition. It would not break my heart to see him higher on this list. I really believe that much in him.
Two Doug Baldwin thoughts. The first one is, correct me if I'm wrong, Doug Baldwin was one goal line interception away from being a part of Super Bowl history for that tapped pass to himself. That was awesome. And then the second thing is, Doug Baldwin makes me hate fantasy football because I lost because of his stupid touchdown thing at the end. That I will no longer play fantasy football because of Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, that was, I mean, nobody on the planet would have or could have predicted that. It was a historical run. He was unremarkable from a statistical standpoint from the first half of the year, which is kind of typical because of the way he's used. And then he is a historically productive fantasy wide receiver, seemingly out of the blue. So I know a lot of people had their leagues kind of destroyed by him. I think mine was as well. So sorry.
So is Baldwin better than Emmanuel Sanders and Sammy Watkins?
I don't know about that.
Hard for me to say.
He's ranked higher on this list. Just saying.
Better than Emmanuel
Sanders. That's
yeah.
The one thing I was going to mention with this list is, please show me 73 and 74 better players than Emmanuel Sanders and Harrison Smith, because in my mind, those guys are pretty good. And so to see them so high is a little shocking for me.
I think at this point of their careers, yes, I do think Doug Baldwin is better than Emmanuel Sanders. He's definitely not more talented than Sammy Watkins. I think that you can definitely make a case for Sammy Watkins being higher on the list, if not, you know, it's based on almost talent alone. So that question is, are you looking at talent and what you think they can do, or productivity and what they did do? And if the answer is productivity, then Doug Baldwin crushes them both. If it's somewhere in between, then it's kind of nebulous. Of the two, I think you could probably make a better case for Sammy Watkins at this stage of their careers. But it's hard. I think it's a reasonable debate to have.
I think with these same positional rankings, I think you would have to, let's say Seattle opens up a trade to the Bills. Hey, Doug Baldwin, Sammy Watkins, straight up. I think the Bills slam the phone down faster than you can say Sammy Watkins. So, for me, it's not close between Baldwin and Watkins and Baldwin and Sanders. I believe those two players are better. However, you know, if this list is based on production of last year, he was more productive. Give him the nod in the list, but let's be realistic here. I would much rather have Sanders or Watkins over Baldwin.
Well, yeah, but by that same measure, I think if the Colt called up Washington and offered them Luck for Captain Kirk straight up, Washington couldn't sign that contract fast enough. That's not really what the top 100 players is about, though.
Fair point. I concede.
All right. Well, I think that's about all the time we have. But before we round out this whole topic, were there anybody else that jumped out to you guys out of these three or out of these 30 rather, or that anything about the process that you find strange?
For me, you know, this list it's a fun exercise. I like watching the videos on all the players. But there's really only one reason I pay attention to this list, and that's to see where Philip Rivers is. And then I just get irrationally upset because I know he's not high enough.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to the list before they start coming out, so I don't really know who's going to be on there. And so for me, I run this roller coaster of, you know, I'm glad my favorite player hasn't been mentioned yet. Then we start getting to the top, and then I start wondering if he's going to get mentioned at all, and maybe I'm going to be really angry when I thought I was going to be really happy about it. Delaney Walker, who we didn't talk about too much, I thought he was just phenomenal for Tennessee last year. He'd kind of been in Vernon Davis's shadow, but was a very good player in his own right. And I think he's really, really emerged as kind of a go-to target for Mariota. It's great to me that he's received some recognition. While we're talking about the top 100, I do think it's worth talking about how the voting occurs. I was doing a little research on the way they do the voting, and it's kind of crazy. They basically send ballots for every player out, which is thousands of players, and I think this past time they only got about 400 back. And they're not asking players for their top 100, they're asking them for the top 20. So every single name you see on this list, every single one of them, some people said were a top 20 player in this league. That means you're Chris Ivory's, you're Richie Incognito's. There's people out there who call them a top 20 player. And, you know, they rank them 1 through 20, so number 1 is more points than number 2, et cetera, et cetera. But so on any one of these rankings, every single ballot was missing 80 of the players you see on this list. Every single person you see on this list, somebody out there thinks is a top 20 player. We were talking earlier about kind of flawed methodology. There's basically no rhyme or reason to this list. To call it a popularity contest would be to sort of undersell how kind of haphazard it is. So while it's definitely good for talking and it's fun conversation, anybody who thinks that if you ever argue with somebody about who's a better player and you refer back to this list, you are part of the problem and you should never be allowed to speak again.
I believe that is a shot to our list maker extraordinaire, Chris, our Saints superfan. But I'll just leave it there. Well, this has been a lot of fun, guys. We've hit a lot of topics. I was hoping that we'd be able to talk about M-Dub's list as well, but there's just not enough time. But trust us, folks, we are gonna keep on having two shows a week, all throughout the rest of this even dead part of the summer. And if you had fun with this, we're gonna have even more fun tearing apart M-Dub's list. Friend of the program, we hope to actually have him on in the next few weeks. But later this week, Pod is going to be back on the host chair, and we're going to be going through the top 10 players of all time from every team. I think that's at least what we're going to be talking about on Thursday, but we will see. Either way, this has been a lot of fun, and if you want to see more of our stuff, you can look us up on Facebook just by typing a Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. We also put out a lot of stuff and get into a lot of conversations on Twitter. The actual show Twitter is NFUPod, at NFUPodcast. But we're always interacting with that as well. And you can find all of our stuff at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. And please, if you get to us, especially if you get our podcast through iTunes, give us a rating and give us some feedback. We love comments, and you can even, especially if you want to give a bit of a longer form feedback, perhaps, you know, if you really want the constructive criticism to come directly to us, you can email that directly to us at our email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. So we're always interested to hear that, and you never know. If you think that your rep for your team on this show is not pulling his own weight, we are the show that is by the fans, for the fans, and we have 32 fans of all the teams here. If you haven't heard from yours, you know, maybe you could challenge for that spot. We'd like to hear your case anyway. But anyways, if someone wants to interact with you directly, Justin, how would they get in touch?
The best way to do it is over Twitter, just at Koreis, at K-O-R-E-I-S. That's just my last name. You can reach me through there directly. You can pretty much find me on Facebook by searching that name as well, or in the Next Fan Up Facebook group, or in Home of the 12, the big Seahawks Facebook group I'm active in, or email the show directly, nextfanup@gmail.com, and talk about all the ways in today that I was wrong, and we can lambast me on the air.
Sounds good. And what about you, Ken? How can people get in touch to tell you just how great they thought the Chargers were last year?
Oh, Jesus. Well, you can catch me complaining about first world problems at Kenneth J. Priest on Twitter. It's the easiest way to get in contact with me. If you want to talk about how cool Joey Bosa is and how he's going to be the Defensive Rookie of the Year, that's where to find me.
Cool stuff. And I am at Clayton Nicholas on Twitter. I'm pretty active with that, and I'm usually getting into some sort of argument with another super fan. And so, you know, please join in if you see any of that. But anyways, this has been Next Fan Up, and there you have it.